What if the earth is flat and air is slowly drowning me? All we know, in fact, is undisputed theory. Reach for the smokescreen, touching up our shared reality. There's no turning back. Release the past. Can you be free? Take me for a ride, take me for a ride. Spinning through the glass, going nowhere. Find a place to go. Silver snakes around my throat. Crawling out of time, crawling out of time. Quarter to the final zone, but it's closing eyes burned through my skull. Clarity deceiving me.
There was a surprising opening, right? Instead of me saying, hey, welcome to Get Intimate with Oliver Wong, it's a song by Patty Lin. The song is called Ride. And also, Patty Lin, she self-produced a music video for Ride, and it was released this February. If you want to watch the video, you can scroll down to the episode description, and you will see there is a link to the video. And I highly recommend you watch the video. It's amazing. There are fighting scenes. Everything is beautifully choreographed. And Patty, she also acted in the video too. So she was doing some physical stunt. Hey, so definitely check it out. And isn't this song beautiful? I just want you guys, you know, think about what the song is about. I feel like, so Patty and I, we also talk about this as well, like what this song is about. And I'm not gonna spoil you anything. And it might not be what you think it is. Okay, so today our guest obviously is Patty Lin, but she is not just a singer-songwriter. She is also a physical therapist, and she has a PhD degree in physical therapy. A PhD degree? Oh my god, what an overachiever. Oh, I feel so humiliated now. Well, anyways, and in her music, she does talk about her experience as a healthcare provider. And I think that is very, very interesting because you don't hear a lot of songs about healthcare. All right, do you know this is the 9th episode of Get Intimate? Wow, I cannot believe we go this far. Whoa. If you have been listening to my podcast and if you have been wanting to support my podcast, what you can do is you can follow us on Instagram, Get Intimate Podcast, or go on our Patreon page, patreon.com/OliverWongComedy. My producer, Soken, and I, we spent a lot of time on researching guests' background, editing, and creating marketing content. So your support will definitely help us grow our podcast. Yes, your support is very important. All right, anyways, now let's get to Patty Lin. This podcast is supported by Yellow Express. Do you have an Asian dad who has never said, I love you, to you? Yellow Express is here to open up all the emotionally unavailable Asian dads. What is Yellow Express and how does it work, you might wonder? Well, Yellow Express is a little yellow pill that will adjust the neurochemicals in your dad's brain. And within 30 seconds of taking the pill, your dad will verbalize what you have always wanted to hear. I love you! And he means it. Yellow Express is engineered by a group of Asian Stanford scientists who have never received love from their Asian dads. So Yellow Express currently only works on Asian dads. I have an Asian dad, because obviously. Well, Yellow Express is $365 per bottle, and each bottle contains 365 pills, because Yellow Express knows you want daddy's love every single day throughout the year. I personally have daddy issues, so yeah, I need daddy's approval every day. Use the promo code Oliver to get your first bottle of Yellow Express for free. Asian loves free stuff, don't we? This commercial is created for entertainment purposes only. The product that was advertised does not exist. Let's get intimate.
let's get into it. Da, 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 da. Let's get into it. Da, 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 da. Let's get into it.
Well, welcome, welcome, Patty. Hi.
Hi, Oliver. Thanks for having me.
Well, thank you for coming and bringing your guitar here.
My guitar.
Yeah. I think that is the thing about being a musician. You need to bring your instrument with you. Like, as opposed to being a comedian, I just show up.
That's true. But I feel like that's my security blanket.
Yeah.
I don't know what to do. Like, right now, I'm like, what do I do with my hands?
Yeah, you feel weird when the instrument is not around you.
Yeah. And, like, when you perform, you just hold the mic or you, like, walk around, right?
Right.
I stand there and I hold the guitar and I just stand in front of the mic. I can't move.
Yeah.
Because I don't know what to do anyway. So there's even sometimes where I use, like, a backing track and I technically don't need to play.
Yeah.
But I do it because I don't know what I would do if I didn't have it.
Oh, so you always need to have a guitar to perform.
I don't know what to do.
That's interesting. And do you usually sit down or stand or like both?
It varies.
It varies. Yeah. Okay, okay. Do you feel concerned when you just put your guitar in the car and then just driving there around and afraid it would get damaged, stuff like that?
Not so much because that's not a very expensive guitar, but I love it though. And maybe later when you see it, you'll see like yesterday I was playing it outside and my friend was like, wow, your guitar is the same color as you.
How long have you had this one?
At least 10 years. I got it right before college and it used to be just like plain, very like wood, like bright wood, like this coaster.
Yeah.
But it has aged and it's been in the sun.And that's changed the color of the wood and the way that it sounds.
Yeah.
So I love it. To me, it's worth a lot. I will say I've spent way more on maintenance than the actual value of the guitar.
And you don't want to buy a new one. It's because you feel sentimental about this one.
Yeah. Oh. And you know what? It works just fine. I've performed with it. I've recorded with it.
Yeah. Do you give your guitar a name, like a nickname?
Well, yes, but this one's boring. So his name is Martin because he is a little Martin.
I don't get that
like,
reference.
The brand.
Oh, oh, okay.
Yeah, like there's Martin guitars and Taylor guitars. So this is a Martin guitar and I just
Hi, Martin. If you are being stranded on an island with a singer, mm-hmm. would you rather it to be Rihanna or Cher?
Rihanna.
Why?
I just feel like we would get along better.
You have something against the Cher?
No, but they're different, right?
Yeah, cool. Okay. And how about Rihanna and Britney Spears?
Probably still Rihanna.
Okay, okay. I would choose Britney Spears because I love her.
I kind of resisted Britney when I was younger.
Yeah?
Because she was super poppy and girly and I'm not.
Right.
And I just resisted those types of things. But I'm okay with it now.
But just in terms of music inspiration, I know you have mentioned to me that you have other inspiration growing up, right?
Yes.
Yeah. Like, who are these people who inspired you?
Well, growing up, so not recent ones, I'd say my first CD was Celine Dion.
Ooh.
Mm-hmm, 'cause she's just an amazing singer.
Which one album?
My favorite song was and still is It's All Coming Back to Me Now.
Yeah.
It's this like piano ballad. And I remember the music video involved somebody. It like had a motorcycle crash.
Yeah.
I still remember that. Like she's singing and then there's a motorcycle crash. And then you see like this open window at night and the curtains are blowing and it's just like very dramatic. And the song is very dramatic. I think it's like...6 or 7 minutes long.
How old were you?
Maybe 4 or 5.
Oh, wow. And you remember that is like the moment you realize you might want to pursue music?
Oh, yeah. Maybe before that. I started banging on the piano when I was like 2 and a half.
Wow.
Because we had a piano. My brother is 6 years older than me, so he was playing.
Yeah.
He had lessons. I would just sit down and like hit stuff.
Yeah.
And I remember like in my mind, I was playing like a concerto or something.
Yeah.
And I'm just playing like gibberish. But I would move up and down and like I was really into it. So by the time I was 3 and a half, I started having piano lessons, which is very lucky. But I remember that first teacher that used to come who worked with my brother, like she wasn't that great. She just like stuck stickers on the keys and then would like take your finger and like press them, which is not really how you learn.
Right.
But I liked it. I kept with it. Actually, my first performance was in preschool.
Yeah. What did you play?
My Bonnie Lies Over the River or something like that. What is that? What's called?
Did you sing?
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
I played one hand only because I was still on the big staff music.
Yeah.
But I played and sang at church because I went to a Lutheran preschool for some reason. I remember walking down there, no stage fright at age 3. And I just sat down and I played piano and I sang.
Oh, do you have music videos about that? Like the video of your performers?
I don't have that. My parents weren't even there. It was just school. Yeah.
Were your parents concerned when they found out, Patty might want to pursue music?
I was always like playing piano and singing in the shower. My parents did karaoke, but I always knew that I wasn't supposed to do music. Like you can pursue it as a hobby. And you have to be really good at it if you're going to do it. But you can't do it seriously because it's not a real career. So
in Asian culture, it's not.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. So yeah. I always knew that. So there was always this struggle because I wanted to. I think by the time I was in middle school, that was a dream of mine, was like to have a band or be like Avril Lavigne or Michelle Branch.
Yeah.
I don't know if you remember them. Maybe not.
I do not grow
not
up in this
Not even Avril
country.
Lavigne.
I know Avril Lavigne. Yeah. I know Avril Lavigne. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
So you say you in middle school, you realize you want to pursue this career really seriously. And I'm sure, pursuing music, you need to spend in time and the money, stuff like that. Mm-hmm. Were your parents supportive of that? Or do you pretty much have to be on your own?
Well, it was a dream, but I also knew that I needed to do well in school and go to college to do something academic. So it was like, I wished that someday it would happen, but I also had this other path that I was taking. Also want to do all those things, being like the typical overachieving Asian girl.
Yeah.
So there's always, I guess, that turmoil inside where I'm like, part of me just wants to go and like have a band and sing.
Yeah.
And then the other part of me was really competitive and did really well in school and did all those other things.
And you don't hate academics?
No.
You don't hate it?
I don't hate it. I would say like if you told me to read a textbook now, it would be very hard to concentrate. But I used to like school, partly because that's how I got out of the house. Like that was the only time I went anywhere. It was school. So I got to see all my friends there. I got to socialize and play outside at recess. I didn't really know what I liked, though. I did well in all the subjects because you're supposed to do well, right? So I enjoyed everything. I liked math, I liked science, I liked history and English. Some people, I feel like very young, they know, like, I'm not good at math, but I really like interior design or something like that. I'm like, how do you know that? We've had the same wallpaper for 20 years. Like, how do you know?
Right, exactly. Yeah. And they don't talk about interior design in school.
Yeah, like, but it's just through their family. Like maybe.
Oh, influence from their parents.
Yeah, and they are more encouraged to just like pursue, like to do things for fun and see what they enjoy. Whereas for me, it was like, you have to get all A's. Do well and take all the advanced classes.
So let's say if you don't get an A, do your parents, punish you for that? Because I remember when I was in high school, when I was in Taiwan, and then the math program in my school was super difficult. And then I just complained to my father that, hey, I think the school has way too difficult math exams, blah, blah, blah. And I couldn't pass the exam. And then my father just, he just hit me. And that is the first time he ever hit me in my life, which is when I complained to him about the academics.
Wow.
Yeah, he never hit me before and he never hit me after. Uh-huh. He only hit me one time when I complained the math was too difficult.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah, so I don't know if your parents were strict like that as well.
Well, I'm perfect.
So you always get A's.
Yeah, no, it's like if I got... Okay, the funny thing is like it has happened before multiple times where it's like I get a 98 and you like everyone else when they get like a 90, they're like really happy, right?
Yeah.
I bring it home and they're like, do you not understand something? Because it's like a 98, you know?
Yeah.
It's like 100. It's like where did those 2 points go? Like
do you need a tutor?
Yeah. Oh my God.
That's what it's like. The only time I got spanked was, I think I was 5.
And how did you do?
I did something nice in class and I was rewarded with a piece of candy and I chose a piece of gum and I ate it without asking my parents.
What?
Yeah. I have never gotten in trouble or spanked for anything else. It was that.
But okay, after that, did you always remember, hey, I need to ask my parents
no,
before I eat
No, just don't tell them that you did. Oops.
So now you have already released a few singles on Spotify and your music career is taking off. Do your parents listen to your music?
My dad definitely does.
What do you mean by he? So you are not sure or like you're just guessing?
No, I know he does.
Okay.
So my dad and I feel like we weren't that close before I went to college. But then over the years, you know, into adulthood, through conversations and visits, we're kind of like friends now. Mm-hmm. And I know like, every time I go home, if I go play tennis with him or something, anybody that I meet, he's like, oh, you're the one who sings. So I know that he shows everybody. I know that he listens to it. He had a heart attack last year and I flew home to be with him for a while. And I remember after his surgery, when I set up his bed in the living room and everything, and I bought him a TV because that's how my dad is. He's so frugal. He doesn't do anything for himself. But I like set up Wi-Fi and a TV for him. And one of the first things he did, like I was doing the dishes and then I hear myself blasting from the living room. And I was like, I ran over and I was like, what are you doing? Like, he's like, I'm listening. I was like, why? And he's like, you don't like it? And I'm like, no, because like, I don't know.
It gets weird.
I get embarrassed. Yeah. He's like laying there like out of commission and he's just like watching me sing on the TV, on YouTube. It was really cute.
I feel it's weird because, my parents, they don't speak English, so they don't understand my stand-up routines. But I would feel weird if they are watching my stand-up in front of me.
Yeah. Well, for more reasons, right? Because your stand-up is more directly personal.
Oh, that's true. Yes.
Like my music, when I first released my EP, the first one, I was nervous because I'm like, I'm not famous. I know that not a lot of people are going to hear it, but everyone I know will probably hear it. And I felt like I was revealing a lot of things about myself. Mm-hmm. And so I was nervous about it. It's like, even though not a lot of people are going to hear it, people that might not know some things about me are going to hear it, right? And my parents and the rest of my family. But then I realized, one, the way that I write and the way most people write, like you never really know what it's about, right? When you listen to a song, you start to relate to it and think about your own life.
Yeah.
You might think, some people even think that a sad song is a happy song.
Yes.
Like they have no idea. And also my family's English isn't it's not their native language. So to understand the nuances of the lyrics
metaphor, stuff
right?
like that.
Yeah. So I'm like, I'm safe there. They don't actually know what anything is about. They just listen to the sounds.
So, you know, this February, you released a music video and the song is called Ride. Mm-hmm. And I listened to that song a few times. I also watched the video a few times. So I kind of understand what it's about emotionally. It's a really powerful and raw song. But I don't really know what it's about because I feel like, I don't know if you are doing this on purpose, but the lyrics can be interpreted in so many ways.
Yes.
Yeah. So I just want to listen to you explaining the origin of this song.
Yeah, this one especially is very veiled and I don't think you would have any idea what it's about if I didn't tell you.
Right.
But I wrote it, I think, in 2016 after Trump was elected and all those conspiracy theories were spiraling out of control and people were starting to like turn against each other. So it's actually about politics.
Oh.
The Take Me For a Ride. Take me for a ride. That means like, so I'm not going to say I'm going to hear out your theories. I'm not going to say no, you know, both parties. If this is your plan to solve a problem, like, okay, let's get into it. What's take me on this ride and show me. Mm. I'm going to suspend my disbelief.
Mm.
But in general, I feel like both parties are tied down. Let me try to remember some of my lyrics, like silver snakes around my throat. A lot of people seem to focus in on that line because silver snakes, I guess.
Mm.
And like, what does that mean? And for me, kind of like smoke, it's something hidden that you can't see, but It's like their throat is being restricted. Mm. So you want to do good, right? But because of big company corruption, big money, your hands are tied. You can't actually do all the good you want to do in society once you're a politician, right? Mm. I feel like a lot of people start out very idealistic.
You're right.
But then you get to the point, and by the time any legislation gets to the top, it has been shaved away, and there's all these favors you have to return or things you can't do. So that's the silver snakes.
Like, I see.
Yeah.
Okay. That's beautiful.
And so it's most of the song is about how we're just fighting ourselves, which is why in the music video, I am literally like trying to kill myself. It's like there's two me's.
Yes, yes.
But in the end, we're the same, and that's America. We have two main parties, and we're also trying to follow all these antiquated rules, right? We have all these traditions that maybe don't make sense anymore, but we're still running our country that way.
Thanksgiving?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, there's all these fallacies that exist, and we're just pretending on some levels because it's comfortable.
Yeah. You know, it's so funny after hearing your explanation. That's totally not how I interpreted
it. I want to know what you thought it was, though.
I feel like my interpretation is really shallow. Because I guess I'm not as smart as you. So when I look at the lyrics and when I watch the video, fighting with yourself. So I thought this is like a song about self-growth. Like you are trying to fight with yourself, and that's how you grow, like, you know, day-to-day life. I feel like, let's say, oh, I wanna work out more, but I don't wanna work out more, so I have to like fight my own will. Yeah, but I know this is a really superficial explanation.
No, but that works too, because songs are always, for me at least, by the time something is written, it is about multiple things. Like the politics and my frustration with it was like the primary inspiration for the song.
Yeah,
but how I feel about like personal struggles and then like global struggles is that they can be very similar. Just like some of my other songs are partially about my relationship with jobs in healthcare and also about relationships with like one person.
Yeah.
Because how you are in life, where you are in that growth process, I think is reflected everywhere.
And also, I just want to mention that, like you said, this song is about politics, which I think is really beautiful. And I think it's really hard to actually talk about politics in your lyrics, right? So that's why you need to use all these metaphors. Because if you are saying all these professional political terms in your lyrics, the song is going to sound really boring and sound really like a propaganda instead of a beautiful emotional song.
And then people don't want to listen to it.
Yeah, so you need to...
I'm tricking them into listening to
it. It's like a literature. You are talking about the things, but without actually talking about it.
Yeah, you think it's just like some pop EDM song.
Yeah.
But it's actually...
Then do you feel like it's a musician's job to explain to the listeners what their songs are about? Or do you feel like even if my listeners, they don't get what it's about, that's fine?
Yeah, if they ask, like if you ask, then I'll tell you. I think that the beautiful thing about music is that everyone interprets every song differently. Like even I love Amy Winehouse, that's one of my inspirations always. Even if I read about like what one of her songs was about, I still remember the first time I hear it, like what I thought about or who I thought about, right? So even though you know, I think it's important what emotion it evoked from you.
Yeah.
And like when I play before the pandemic in like bars and coffee shops and things, I love when somebody just comes up to me and is like, that reminded me, or like that really made me feel the way I did when I broke up with so-and-so. And then they just like tell me about a thing in their life. And that's really awesome.
Before you play the song on the stage, do you tell your audience, hey, this song is about blah, 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 or you don't tell them?
Sometimes. It depends on the night. If I'm feeling more open or chatty, then I might say something. Or I won't refer to a specific person, but I'll say this is like how it feels when you are in a relationship that you know you should get out of. But it's also really comforting to be there because change is scary. And so you're just stuck.
Yeah.
Right. So that can apply to a lot of people.
Let's take a break. Be right back. This podcast is brought to you by Captain Daddy. Are you looking for a sugar daddy? I am. Haha. Captain Daddy is a grocery shopping delivery service where you can hire a sugar daddy to shop groceries and personally deliver them to you. Captain Daddy connects you with local sugar daddies who are eager to help you with your life. Need hot wings and chocolate cupcakes but feeling too lazy to go out? Well, you can find a sugar daddy on Captain Daddy. Not only will your sugar daddy deliver food to you in a luxurious vehicle, but he will also offer to be your company of the day. Yep, with just one click away, you can be in the passenger seat of his Tesla. If you prefer staying in, of course, your Captain Daddy is always down to be a snuggler. Hiring a sugar daddy on Captain Daddy does not cost you any money. What? It's free? How come? Yeah, it's free, cause what? Sugar daddy need no money from their babies. They just want to see you smile and hear you say, "Aye, aye, Captain Daddy." Due to the increased demand of this service, every customer can only order one sugar daddy per month. But if you use the promo code Oliver, you can order as many as you want per day. And they come in different colors and sizes. Just remember, sugar daddies don't like to run into other sugar daddies. Make sure you space out your appointments. Go on CaptainDaddy.com and find your Captain Daddy today.
This commercial is created for entertainment purposes only. The product that was advertised does not exist.
So you say a lot of people, they will come up to you after the performance and just, you know, talk about how they feel about your music and stuff. I have a question because I'm also a performer. So, you know, sometimes people will come up to me and, you know, just chat with me, stuff like that. So from there, just from my interaction with my audience, I can feel, oh, sometimes my audience have certain expectations about me. Like they see me as an Asian male performer. So they would think, oh, as an Asian male performer, you probably will talk about what it's like to be an Asian, what it's like to be a gay man, stuff like that. And I think those...
What is that like? I'm just kidding.
Right. And I think those expectations are... I understand why they have those expectations. I think it's natural people will have that. But also you will feel a little constrained by that.
Yeah,
it's like, ooh. Because sometimes I will do a set without addressing the fact that I am an Asian. And people will feel weird about that because...
they come up to you and you're like, by the way, did you know that you're Asian?
I mean, they don't say that, but you will feel like that's kind of weird. So, I don't know, as a Asian female singer, do you feel similar things? Like you have to talk about your Asianness and stuff?
I actually haven't encountered that as much as you would think.
Yeah.
In the beginning of when I was like, okay, I'm going to sing and write music. And I started singing at open mics and like indie music nights. I somehow, the mics that I found, they were mostly white.
Mm-hmm.
And my music is, I don't even know how to describe it, but it's not K-pop. I guess that's like the only Asian reference that I have. So just by that, I feel like it takes me out of that box.
Mm.
I don't think people necessarily know how to categorize me, but nobody asked me specifically about being Asian. Mm. Although I will say I was often the only non-white person
in the lineup.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
The first open mic I went to, a patient told me to go, and it was, is it a place called the Gardenia? It's just this like old jazz cabaret lounge.
Mm.
And so everyone there was probably 50s and up.
And all white.
And white.
Yeah.
And so, but just being under 30 made me stick out anyways. Mm. So it wasn't that I was an Asian female. It was just like, what is this person doing here? And they're all singing like really old jazz and show tunes. And then I go up there and sometimes I sing like a folk country-ish song of mine. Sometimes I rap. And
I would imagine like jazz, folk, country, all this kind of music are not what typically Asian American musician will play, right? Am I right about that?
I think so. Or are we also just being affected by the lack of representation? Like, yeah. We have no idea really what it sounds like, except now K-pop is obviously made it to the US and it's huge. So everybody thinks of that. But, you know, during the pandemic on like Clubhouse and stuff, I've actually met virtually other Asian singers. And there are plenty of like folk and country singers. You just don't really see them. Like, I think the general public is not used to it. And that keeps us from perhaps standing out. So you know that there are folk Asian looking singers.
Yeah.
I never know how to describe myself. And then like going back to the music video.
Yeah.
I thought about possibly paying for some advertising because that is what, you know, indie artists have to do to get a little more visibility. But I kind of just gave up because I didn't know how to categorize myself. Because like, what do I sound like, right? If I listed other singers who were white and black as like being similar, and so I show up after like an Ellie Goulding or a Sia song, but then the thumbnail is like me, an Asian girl in a dress. I see. Would people even make that connection? They'd be like, this is a really random pop-up. I'm just going to go to the next thing. Because I just think that there's not enough representation visually. Because sometimes actually you hear Asian artists, if you don't look at them, you don't know that they're Asian. And so everyone else doesn't even realize they're listening to an Asian artist. And then if you see the image, then people might think that, oh, this is probably in a different language, which is why we entered the music video in a bunch of festivals. And we've been very lucky to be included in a bunch of them so far. And I don't even, they haven't all like deemed winners or anything, but if you're selected, then that means it's in the lineup and people will see it, right? And I'm just like proud to have like a quality music video made by a lot of like a primarily Asian American and female crew to show people that this exists and it's part of the mix. Because usually in the lineup, it'll all be mostly white and then some black artists, and that's what you're used to seeing, right?
Nobody
is used to seeing Asian people on the screen and Asian music videos, and we're fighting and doing all this stuff. And so I'm pretty pumped about that. Even though the song to me, like I wrote that so long ago, I definitely need to put out new music. But in terms of like a media win, I feel like it's really important that we put it out there and people are seeing it.
Here's a fun fact about this video. So Patty, she is fighting. She has a lot of like physical stunt in the video. And then I was very impressed. Like, how long did you train for all the physicality?
We did have some stunt rehearsals leading up to it. I would say stunt training, just a couple of weekends, but we worked with a really awesome stunt choreographer and everybody else is just a badass. So they were ready. And I normally work out a lot too. So I will say like, we were supposed to shoot it in like April.
Yeah.
And so that obviously got pushed back. I was upset because in April I was in better shape than in November.
Physically.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
Because I had just done this like challenge at the gym that I go to at 45 Arts District. And I won that challenge. I lost a bunch of fat. And so I was ready. And then the pandemic hit and we postponed it. And then my dad had a heart attack. And then I was like in Maryland, just depressed. And then the director was like, we're ready for you. Like whenever you want to do this. So I actually came back specifically just to shoot that video. And then I went back to help take care of my dad for a little longer. But yeah.
That is cool. I want to go back to these Asian American music scenes. So I did a little research before our interview. And then I found out there are some people, they don't really like the term Asian American music. Because they feel like if we say, hey, this is Asian American music, we are kind of like saying that all Asian Americans have the same style of music. But as you can know, Asian American music encompasses so many cultures, like Japanese culture, Korean culture, or maybe Thailand culture, Taiwanese culture. And each country has different kind of identity and cultural sense, even if they are immigrants in here. As you can know, Vietnamese Americans, they have a very different lifestyle than Taiwanese Americans. Yeah, so I don't know, how do you feel about that? Do you brand yourself as an Asian American musician, or do you just brand yourself as a female musician?
I just say that I'm a singer-songwriter.
Yeah, you don't.
I don't. Yeah.
Attach
anything.
Yeah, yeah.
Because I don't know what Asian American music sounds like. I don't know what that means.
Yeah.
We don't categorize any other group like that.
I don't know if that is a good thing or a bad thing, or maybe it's just neutral. But it does feel like it will make people confused too.
It pigeonholes you.
Yeah.
Because, like I said, like sometimes I lean towards, like, I would say, like, folk rock.
Yeah.
And to anyone else, that probably seems more like a white
right.
kind of thing.
Right.
But if I'm only ever playing in Asian American events, then that very much restricts me. And I often feel like I don't fit in. I feel lucky that I've made it to LA and then, like, found a really good Asian American community.
Yeah.
I will also say that the community is a bunch of different kinds of communities, because obviously I met you through Crazy Woke Asians with Kiki, and through that I met a lot more international Asians, if that makes sense.
Like Asians you, like, who you are born and raised from different countries.
You came over, and that language and humor is also different. And then there are some other groups that I've been lucky to be a part of around here, where there are more people who were actually born and raised in California specifically. I'm from the East Coast, and when I'm with a lot of Asian Americans who are more from the East Coast, that's also different. So it's not even like if you're Chinese or Japanese or Thai or Vietnamese, it's also if you're American, like where you were raised.
Yeah, it's differences. Very intersectional.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. We cannot just be reduced to being an Asian.
That's why, like, AAPI month.
Yeah.
It's like, hooray, we have something, but they definitely just, like, lumped everyone
Asians
and Pacific
together.
Islanders.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I want to know, what is your opinion about K-pop? Well, obviously, K-pop is really popular in the United States, and I'm happy to see that, you know, K-pop is, you know, occupying some market share. However, I don't think K-pop is a really accurate representation of Asians' emotions. Because I grew up in Taiwan, and Taiwan is in Asia. If you don't know, it's another Asian country. And
it's not Thailand.
It's not Thailand.
By the way.
And you listened to Taiwanese songs before, right?
Mm-hmm.
So as you know, Taiwanese songs are more emotional, and they are usually slow, and they have a lot of, like, sad songs, and they can talk about, like, being so heartbroken, and then they couldn't get over it, stuff like that. Of course, we have happy songs, but I feel like most of the time Taiwanese songs are more emotional. But K-pop obviously is not emotional. K-pop is, like, so electric, so fast, and it's a little westernized, actually.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like they are being influenced by a lot of western pop
hip-hop
singers. Yeah. So I feel like, sure, K-pop is performed by Asian people, but is that really a good way to understand what Asian music is? Yeah. Yeah.
Well, I feel like K-pop is its own genre.
Right, that's true.
It's great that they're more popular now. And so, again, we have some visibility, but it's definitely, it's pop music. It's sensationalized.
Yeah.
So that usually does take out emotions. It's just one style of music, you know?
Yeah.
It's definitely not all-encompassing. Not all Asian people do. I mean, I don't make music like that. But it's similar to how I feel in general when I am in the lineup with a bunch of other artists who are more pop, because I don't know how to categorize myself, and I think loosely everything is just pop.
Yeah.
But my songs are usually darker and more emotional. I think that is potentially harder to reach, like, any sort, if you're not famous, to reach the top of a chart or to be remembered. I feel like it's easier if it's something upbeat and catchy.
That's true. I did notice that American music were more about happiness, and they want to they want to move on. They keep looking forward.
It's like very positive.
Very positive. Yeah. Like everything is like, oh my God.
I'm strong.
Like I'm so sad, but I'm strong. I'm not being affected by the breakup, stuff like that.
Yeah.
But like Taiwanese songs are they like to be in the state of sadness.
Which is how I am, and I am Taiwanese, so yeah. That makes total sense.
So I don't know why. I think it's the culture thing. I think American culture in general just wants everybody to be positive.
Yeah, and that's not always a good thing.
Yeah.
I don't know if you've heard the term toxic positivity lately, but yeah, that happens a lot. Yes, we need to be motivated and like confident and know what you're worth, but sad things do happen. We can't just pretend that they don't exist.
How do you find your inspirations? Do you find it from like your work or your life? So I think as a comedian, the way I find my inspiration is I talk about my family a lot. Mm-hmm. So I just think about what can I make fun of my families and stuff like that. But I obviously for you as a musician, as far as I know from your music, you don't talk about your family a lot. You talk about other stuff.
Yeah. I love that though. You like, I just imagine you sitting down with like a notebook, a blank page, and you just like, how can I make fun of my family today?
Yeah. What is traumatizing
me? What haven't I said yet?
Yeah. I usually think about what traumatized me by my parents actually.
Yeah. Well, that's fair.
Yeah. It's like, oh, I hate my parents when they say I cannot be gay. So I want to make fun of them. But now they are fine with it. So, but mm-hmm. back then they are not. But so like for you, I feel like you talk about a lot of societal issues, right?
I will say I'm not a very disciplined writer. So I write what I feel. So when I'm frustrated about things, I start writing, and it's not necessarily, I'm not writing because I want to write a song. Yeah. I just start writing. And then sometimes it starts to like kind of rhyme or have a kind of beat to it.
Yeah.
And then it turns into a song.
Yeah.
Sometimes when I'm sad, I just write stuff and then it turns into a song later.
Yeah.
I do include things about my parents, but you just don't even know.
It's very subtle.
Everything is very subtle.
And your parents, when they are listening to it, they don't even realize.
They have no idea.
That is funny.
Yeah, I write about, you know, my life. I write about relationships. I write about healthcare. It's all in there.
Yeah, yeah. So healthcare obviously is inspired by your occupation, which is a physical therapist.
Mm-hmm.
So, how did you become a physical therapist?
I did really well in school, but I didn't really know what I wanted to do, right? I kind of liked everything and I was decent at every subject.
Yeah.
I didn't have that one passion other than like I wanted to be a singer, but obviously that's not an option.
Yeah.
So I applied to a bunch of colleges, and for each one, I chose a different major for what I felt like would be best at that college.
Oh, wow. Well, that is pretty impressive. Because you need to prepare a specific application for each major, right?
Kind of.
Oh, okay.
For undergrad, it's not as crazy that way.
Oh, that's true. Okay.
So I ended up going to Northeastern, which wasn't originally even on my list, but my brother was going to music school in Boston. He was like, hey, there's a school in my backyard called Northeastern. I think it's pretty good. And then that same week, my calculus teacher was just like, one of my favorite teachers ever, told me that his niece goes to Northeastern. I was like, I might as well apply, see what happens. And I feel so snobby. It wasn't in the top 100.
Yeah.
So I was like, if I'm going to go there, then it has to be worth it.
Right.
So I applied to the PT program because it's a direct, like if you get in, you get in for 6 years straight, you get your bachelor's and a doctorate.
Mm.
So I did that and I used my SAT scores. I actually got a scholarship to go there. And so I went because it was the best deal.
Right. So you went into this doctorate program. When I found out you need to be a doctor in order to become a physical therapist, I was shocked. I was like,
people are.
I feel like a master's degree would be sufficed.
It used to be a bachelor's and then it became a master's and then it became you have to have a doctorate now. I would say yes, it is necessary because there's a difference between physical therapists and then just like personal trainers, even though the abbreviations are the same and people get
Oh, I see.
Really upset about it. I think legally, personal trainers are not supposed to identify themselves as PTs because yeah. PTs are PTs. It's like in the laws.
Right.
But it might differ by state.
Yeah.
We learn a lot of medical stuff. Like we had a cadaver lab. Like I cut open.
I see.
People,
I see.
And like we learn about medical conditions. We learn about every organ in the body and all like the different diseases that mm-hmm. can impact somebody's health, because it's not just how your muscles and joints are doing. Sometimes it might seem like you have shoulder pain or something, but you actually have lung cancer.
Yeah.
Sometimes people have pain up here and it's their GI.
Yeah.
And so you have to know those kinds of things. And we work with people most typically that you would realize that we do medical stuff. It's like when you work with people in the hospital and they just had surgery. So they were like just cut open. You would not have a personal trainer do that. So we learn a lot of medical things that way.
Let's take a break. Be right back. Get Intimate with Oliver Wong is supported by Dump and Yum Rice Cooker. Do you love eating rice but too lazy to cook it? Yes, that is me. I love eating but I'm too lazy. And Dump and Yum Rice Cooker is my latest kitchen solution. Yeah, so what it does is that it will turn anything white into rice in a matter of seconds. Yes, anything white into rice. This is definitely an amazing product. So I'm a rice lover. I eat rice all the time and I'm very lazy to cook it. You know, you have to wash the rice and wait for the rice to be cooked, which can take about 15 to 20 minutes. Too much work and too much time. But Dump and Yum Rice Cooker is my new best friend. So the other day, I was thinking about throwing away a white t-shirt that I no longer wear. Then I'm like, wait a second, let's turn this shirt into rice. So I dumped the shirt in a Dump and Yum rice cooker, and in 5 seconds, my shirt was transformed into a pot of delicious white rice. Yes, it can turn anything white into rice. White balloons, white restaurant receipts, white boyfriend or girlfriend. Okay, well, don't put your lover in the cooker. There are other ways to show your love than turning them into rice, right? Yeah, and I don't think it's gonna fit. Human body is kind of big. But anyways, so Dump and Yum Rice Cooker, it's your lazy way to cook rice. Go on dumpandyumricecooker.com to get your cooker now. It is $800 per unit. I know it's a little pricey. Yeah, because it's a technology product. It's like very, you know, high tech. But all of our Get Intimate listeners, you guys can use the promo code Oliver to get 1% discount. That is $8 off. How awesome is that?
This commercial is created for entertainment purposes only. The product that was advertised that does not exist.
You say you are a freelancing physical therapist.
That's just what I call it, yeah.
Okay, can you elaborate on what does that mean? What is like freelancing physical therapist?
So I, instead of working at like one hospital or one clinic, 9 to 5, or usually it's like you work like 7 to 7 some days and then 10 to 5. Anyways, instead of being at one place, I am an independent contractor with a bunch of different places, although the laws changed in California, so I'm becoming W-2. But just I do a lot of different kinds of part-time PT, partly so that I have the flexibility as an artist to, like, if I need to go shoot something or record for a couple of days, I can just shift my schedule around. And also it allows me to work in different settings with different types of patients. If you're only at one place, then you, for some people, this is nice. Then you have a routine and you see the same ages or the same types of illnesses and things. And for me, I like a challenge and I like change. So I do some home health. I do some neuro home health. Sometimes I have worked in clinics with like younger people or just like the general orthopedic population. I've worked in skilled nursing. And now I have discovered these like Medicare adult health centers, which is not something we ever learned about in school. And it actually, it pays decently and it just gives my life more flexibility. Because there's a lot of burnout in healthcare. I want to say it's not just in healthcare. It's in every industry. There's high burnout with the traditional work style, which is you know, your 9 to 5, which really is like an 8 to 6 plus commute.
Yeah, especially in Los Angeles.
Oh, yeah. I had, you know, in LA when I was working in clinics, I was treating patients who made a lot of money.
Yeah.
But they were miserable and had like foot or back or hip pain. And like, it mostly was just from sitting in a car.
Oh, me too.
Which is like, yeah, I can show you all these things to do. I can do manual therapy on you to like, you'll feel better temporarily. But like, you really just need to stop driving 2 hours each way to work.
Yeah. I would imagine as a physical therapist, it is a really intimate occupation where you have to spend a lot of time with your patients, especially if you are spending time with them one-on-one.
Mm-hmm.
So I wonder, do you actually get to know your patients on a personal level? Or do you prefer to keep a professional distance?
Generally, you start with the professional distance, right? And like when I was fresher out of school, I really took that to heart. And I always declined any like personal communication or like if they invited me to like an event or like go to the farmer's market or something. Because sometimes people are just friendly, and especially a different generation is like, oh, you're in town. There's this thing happening. Let's go together. My family's going to go. And I used to just be like, no, I can't. Be professional. But then I noticed like some of my CIs, clinical instructors, supervisors, like there's a line that you kind of have to decide patient by patient, like what's okay and what's not. When in doubt, professional distance. But I usually don't reveal a lot about myself when I'm treating patients too. Like most of them don't know that I also make music.
Right.
Most of them don't know what I do outside of the hour or two that I see them.
Mm.
And if they don't ask, I don't offer it because that's their time, right? It's their healing. I try to ask them about them because for me, I don't only focus on like whatever joint or whatever, you know, that we're working on. I do try to figure out like what else in their life is affecting them.
Oh, they are physical. Like the trauma, or maybe they are being sad about something and like, they can impact their body.
And or it can impact why they're not doing their exercises.
Depressed or whatever.
It's not always like cut and dry. So it's like, we're doing all this stuff here, but like, why is it not
getting better?
Yeah. Oh, like there's this other roadblock that's affecting how you're doing physically, then that's affecting this specific injury, not even just like all of your health. But I have had patients that we just click more and I get to know them better and their families. And like I sang at a patient's wedding a couple years ago.
I wonder how does that work? Like, do patients just suddenly one day and be like, hey, Patty, I feel like we are friends. Let me tell you about my life stuff. And like, how do you ease into that conversation? Because I don't know.
I don't know. They usually just open up to me. I think I just have that kind of face.
Maybe you have the energy that people can feel comfortable with.
Well, now I'm like talking to you freely, right? But I usually, when it's somebody I don't know, I'm pretty quiet.
Yeah.
I'm very good at letting people talk about themselves.
Right.
And so they feel comfortable and I'm like making them feel better physically. So a lot of times people open up to me about other things.
And then you would follow up questions.
Or sometimes you don't even have to ask, they kind of just keep going, and if you just like affirm, then they continue. But when people feel more comfortable mentally than physically, they can let go too. It's very related. Like I did have one patient once who like had hurt their ankle, but it was stuck. Like once you pass 6 months, that's chronic. And they were actually with a different therapist before, but one day ended up on my schedule and they had been trying to mobilize that ankle for months. I started working with this person a couple sessions in. This person's really soft-spoken and then the other person, the other therapist was not, but I am too. So then this patient started opening up more and there was one session when they revealed something emotionally that they've been holding on to for the past year and cried. And in that moment, the ankle opened.
Oh my god.
I was like, whoa, it is real. Like it is connected.
It is.
But I will always
the
remember
mind and the
that.
Body are connected.
Yeah.
Oh my. Has it ever happened before to you that where when the patient is revealing their story and then you're like, ooh, that's too much. Let's take a break here.
It gets close, but I'm pretty good at just kind of probably shouldn't like joke it off. But yeah. I do like try to deflect and like direct them in a different direction.
Right. Yeah. Because you don't want them to actually reveal their severe trauma to you.
Yeah. Right? Or it just gets weird. Like when I was still a student and we had to wear business casual for some reason. I don't know why that's a thing. In some clinics, you have to wear like flats and like a cami and a cardigan. And also I have boobs. So like when I'm stretching and leaning over people, it's a little weird.
Yeah, it's so constrained.
And so there was one like older dude who was kind of awkward anyways. And I was like on the table stretching their leg.
Yeah.
His leg. And it's like you see where their eyes go.
Oh my, so
awkward.
And they
start to talk about like how like much he used to party and how he smokes marijuana sometimes. I'm like, I don't need to know this stuff.
Yeah.
And you're really creepy, you know?
Right. Has anybody ever asked you on a date?
After the fact, yes. So like after I was done.
Oh, after the treatment. Yeah.
Yeah.
And you obviously you have to say no, right?
Yeah.
Because that's what the law requires. Mm-hmm. Oh, wow. So you cannot. It's like a therapist.
Yeah.
Like a counselor.
Yeah, you can't.
And some of your peers, they know you are a musician. Some of them know.
Yeah, some of them know.
And how did they find out?
It depends. Sometimes, especially in LA, they're also musicians or entertainment people. So just through conversation. I mean, I kind of judge case by case because for somebody who's more traditional, maybe older, I think they feel more comfortable believing that this is all I do with my life.
Mm.
Like just being
right. Because they couldn't imagine a physical therapy having another life.
But then on the flip side, there's people who I meet also all ages, some older, who are creative people.
Yeah.
And when I reveal that I also write and do these and think about these other things, then they open up more because otherwise they think that I'm like a cut and dry healthcare person and they're this creative person and I don't really understand their life.
So
case by case, I just like if I feel like it'll help, then I might say something, but I don't say the extent of it. Like, you know, there was someone that I just like, oh, I play guitar too.
Yeah.
And they were like later on they're like, oh, do you write songs sometimes? And I was like, sometimes, yeah. And then like left it at that.
Do your patients actually listen to your music and then
some of them
and come back to discuss your music with you?
Some of them have. I never like pull it up for them, but if they're curious enough, they do. Or sometimes they tell other people that I work with because I work at different companies, right? Yeah. Sometimes you work on a team, but like you go separately. And so it has, there are a few people here and there who know. And then those clinicians sometimes end up revealing it to new patients that we share.
Do you think it's weird that your patients listen to your music and come back to discuss it with you? Because I feel... because I have a day job and then my boss, my colleagues, they also watch my comedy on my Instagram.
Oh, that's funny.
And that is weird to me because the persona I am when I'm doing comedy is very different than the persona I am when I'm in a work setting.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know if my... well, obviously, I know my boss and my colleagues really well. So they would not think less of me when I show them my comedy. But I would assume if I am going to a new company and then this new company is going to hire me and then they check my social media and they see Oliver is doing all this silly stuff. How can we take him seriously in a work setting? Do you have similar feelings or concerns about that?
I was just having a conversation about that yesterday.
Yeah.
Again, it's different because you're doing comedy and you're revealing more, I would say, than I do. But when I was finishing up PT school and I did my final project with the health informatics program and those professors, we had a discussion at one point and they jokingly, but like semi-jokingly, were like, just remember, you know, if you're applying for a grant or to be on a research team, you got to scrub your social media. Don't let them find out that you're in a band at night. It means that you're not like focused, right? And they were just joking and everybody else was just like very one-tracked scientist, right? But in my mind, I was like, oh my God, but I do want to do that, you know? And so that's why I never used to tell people at all that I do other things.
So after working, how long have you been a physiotherapist?
I think it's like 5 or 6 years.
5 years. So what are some of the issues that you see in the United States healthcare system?
Health insurance.
Right.
The insurance-driven model where, like, some people can get unlimited number of visits with me, even if for their specific diagnosis, they're actually fine after 6 weeks, let's say. But then they have gotten used to me, like, working with me, so they just, like, keep trying to come back, and their insurance is paying for it. And it's great. I'm glad you love me. But someone else needs this more, right?
Oh, I see. You cannot deny your patients, right?
I can tell them that they're ready to leave. Okay, this is when I was working for companies, right? So clinics will keep taking those patients as long as they want to come because they want to make money, right?
Course.
So I'm not going to be like, nope, cut them off.
Right.
And then there's people who, let's say, are in Medicare or just some of the other insurances that don't give them as much. They might be in the middle of recovering how to walk, but they run out of visits.
Mm.
And then we just have to send them home or say, like, you can come back, but it's out of pocket.
Yeah.
Cash pay. And that's a lot of money.
Yeah. Yeah. It's not a one time thing. It's going to be a few more months.
Yeah. And, like, I know a lot of patients who have scheduled their body maintenance and surgeries around the insurance year.
Yeah.
So it's like they try, if they're going to have major surgery or, like, get sick, they try to have everything in that 1 year after they pay their however many $1,000 deductible.
Yeah.
So that's really a problem. And then working in skilled nursing, which is mostly Medicare, Medicaid.
What is skilled nursing?
It's usually older population. It's when people have been in the hospital, like something acute, and they aren't ready to go home yet. They still need skilled attention. So they still have nursing and all kinds of rehab every day. Like, they have to qualify by needing this continued care in order to live there.
Okay.
And that's usually, they're usually Medicare and Medicaid patients, which comes with a lot of rules. I have spoken to somebody who's worked there more recently. So when I was working there, it was minute-based. It was like people were put onto different levels based on their condition. And based on those levels, I had to see them for, say, 60 or 80 or 85 minutes per day for therapy.
Mm.
And I did it as a traveler. So a travel PT, or, you know, there's travel nurses and travel doctors. You go to fill a gap in a hospital or a facility for usually 13 weeks.
Mm.
You sign a contract for that. And they pay more because they desperately need people. Mm. So I did that. And because I was a traveler, I felt like I had more freedom to say no to things.
Right.
Because so in that previous model, the therapist is supposed to say what level that the patient fits in.
Mm.
But the company always just put them at the highest.
Because they can make more money from this.
Yes. And so by the end of the week, they're like, we need this many more minutes. And I would say no. Sometimes, like, this person is here for terminal care. They're just palliative. Like, they just want to be comfortable. I'm not going to go and ask them what their goal is and make them work out because they just want to die comfortably.
Yeah.
And so as a traveler, I knew it's more of a hassle to fire me than it is anything else. So I would say no. But then some other poor soul would have to pick up those minutes. So I felt bad about that.
Mm.
They don't do the minute method anymore. I talked to somebody who's working there. They have, like, a different level system, but it's still, when you're working in skilled nursing, it's very physically draining.
Can PT go on a strike?
Well, yeah, but
yeah,
this is what I always complain about to my friends, like, nurses, doctors, PTs, we can go on strike, but then, like, what about those poor patients?
There's the dilemma,
right? Yeah. So, I mean, I would say in general, if you do healthcare and you stay in healthcare, you care about people. And so there's always that, like, I need to do this because those people are relying on me.
I mean, there's a really selfless outlook, and I admire that. But also at the same time, it's sad to me because I feel like people who work in healthcare, they should be treated respectfully.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But I feel like the system is not giving them the respect they deserve.
Yeah.
And compared to people who work in entertainment, Like if you are a screenwriter or if you are, I don't know, a film director, and then if you are not being treated well, which most of the time, yeah, you are not, you can go on a strike. You can refuse to write script and stuff like that. But the reason why you can go on a strike is because nobody's relying on you.
Yeah.
The world is going to be continuing operating even if your movie is not made.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody's life is hinged on your occupation. But people who work in healthcare, just like you said, you need to take care of your patients. It's not like you can just leave your job.
Yeah, well, like during the pandemic, a lot of healthcare workers were overworked. And also, it's a lot of trauma to see all these people dying, right?
Yeah.
But they're still going in. They're just going home and crying and then going back in because they need to go take care of these people. I mean, I don't think people got raises.
Yeah. I really want you to teach me some tips and tricks on how to care my body. I can tell you what my issue is. I have a lot of problems with my lower back.
As everybody does.
I think, like you said, I drive too much and then I sit too much. And then now everybody's working from home. It's not like we get to walk around a lot.
Mm-hmm.
So what can we do?
Yeah, well, I'm not going to diagnose you or do anything. You know, yeah. It's not a medical thing.
Yes.
This is not that. But in general, like, do you stretch?
Occasionally, okay. Not every day.
Yeah. Right off the top, you need to stretch more. When you sit, your hamstrings get really tight.
Yeah.
Your hip flexors get really tight. Your external rotators get really tight.
Yeah.
Especially from driving. And everything is connected, right? So when all those different parts that are like lashing your joints together and moving them get tight, that constricts the space between your joints.
Mm.
And your butt is obviously connected to your back. So if all these things are tight, it's going to affect the tension in your back.
Mm.
And then the way you're sitting, if you're arching more, then you're also compressing your back, right? And that's why you need to work on more neutral spine and working on your core stability.
Mm.
And everything is a balance. Like when people work out, sometimes they only work out the front of their body because that's what you can see in the mirror. And even though you look really strong, that can cause issues on your back because your back muscles and your shoulder blade postural muscles aren't strong enough.
Mm. Sometimes I will be so lazy that I don't want to stretch, but I also want to relax my body. What I will do is our community has a jacuzzi and they have like hot water, like hot tub. And I'll just go there to, you know, be in there for like 10 minutes. Does that help?
That helps warm up your muscles. That can help you relax. I would say just try doing some stretches while you're in the jacuzzi.
Right.
Because it helps. If your muscles are warm, you'll actually be able to stretch better.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much, Patty, for coming to my podcast.
You are so welcome. Thank you for inviting me.
How do people find you?
They can find me online at Pat5E, P-A-T-T, the number 5, and the letter E, on most things like Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, though I don't use it that much right now, SoundCloud, all of the things.
And of course, Spotify too.
Yes, so my name is P-A-T-T-I-E, Lynn, L-I-N. I'm on Spotify, Apple, YouTube, all of those things.
So people can find you online. Can they find you in person? Anything coming up?
Yes, you know, things are starting to open up. I haven't been too active about finding gigs, but there is this crazy event happening on August 21st. I will be performing some songs on roller skates, hopefully, if I can learn by then. Or I will be wearing skates anyways. I might be on the floor, but there's a giant skating event to raise money for a nonprofit called Valor. And it's the nonprofit is helping those in early addiction recovery to keep them on the right course and keep people off the streets. You can find more information about that, of course, online, but it's called Valor Fitness. And we will be holding this giant skating event where there's going to be music. There's going to be like a fashion shoot and other vendors and booths and things like that.
Where's the venue?
It's in South LA. It's it's pretty cool. It's this big loft where they usually film music videos. So it's wooden floors. Very, very fashionable.
Okay.
There's going to be different sets. I think there's going to be like a love couch. There's some beds. There's like a classroom and a gym setting. So if you come out, you can definitely do your own little photo shoots and get some skating in.
Oh, sounds fun. Okay, August 21st.
Yes.
What time?
It, I don't remember. There's two sessions.
Oh, okay.
It's going to be like 6 or 7 p.m. and then like 9 p.m. maybe, where we're going to do the whole show twice.
Okay, so after listening to this episode, if you want to see Patty Lin in person, hey, August 21st, okay?
And it's a great cause, raising money for a nonprofit.
Yeah, yeah. Cool, thank you.
You're very welcome. Chat with you soon.
Grandma's a corpse with a heartbeat. A smile in my mind doesn't reach her cheeks. Oh, but we can't do what we can do. The burden of rescue, for we are human. Ooh, we are human. Ooh, human. Last time I checked, it means we hedge our bets, cause money equals respect. Emotional bandwidth drained by each paycheck. Empty initiatives by each new exec. Sweet talking lies, which words are missing in action? Got lofty ideas, yet all you do is make factions. Spouting new convictions from our desk that leans. Got a gold green diet, but you like your sleeves clean. To see is to believe, so you divert your eyes. Frightened by dismissal from professional ties. Feeding our loved ones, chemical lies. Leaving a trail of disaster, don't act so surprised. Grandma's a corpse with a heartbeat. Smile in my mind doesn't reach her cheeks. Oh, but we can't do what we can do. The burden of rescue, for we are human. Ooh, we are human. Ooh.
So this one called COT, that is my healthcare rant, which I wrote even, I think I was still a clinical student when I wrote it because I was so frustrated by how everything worked. And it made me sad to see how some of the patients were living and how we had to treat them.
After this episode ends, all you have to do is search Patty Lin on Spotify and listen to her music. And especially now, we have gotten to know her on a personal level. I think when we listen to her music, we will have a different perspective. Yeah, definitely search her and follow her on Spotify. Alright, if you would like to support us, you can follow us on Instagram at Get Intimate Podcast. And if you would like to support us on Patreon, it's patreon.com/alloverwongcomedy. Even if just $5 per month is still a big encouragement for me and my producer to continue producing our content. So please consider if you like our podcast. Well, and now, everybody, go stretch, following Dr. Patty Lin's direction, okay? Stretch every day. Take care of your body. Bye.
Let's get intimate.